I'm John Lee Cox, and whilst the presentation loads, I just wanted to introduce my collaborators on this series of studies, Andrew Ristvee and Brooke Bologna, without whom this work would not happen. So what we're trying to do with our work, and we are nursery and greenhouse folks, really what we're trying to do is relate volumetric water content and matrix potential and figure out where we are in terms of water stress. As many of you know, there are many ways to measure water. What unfortunately we don't have a very good knowledge of is the lower limits of the amount of water we can apply without inducing water stress. So what we're trying to do is not only understand this in terms of soils, but also, quite frankly, understand this in terms of soilless substrates. So to orientate you in soils, because it's easy to kind of understand this, this is a figure from Zottarelli, and as you can see, the increasing field capacity is something that we know that occurs with different soil types on the x-axis. Volumetric water increases. But what's interesting is if you look at that permanent wilting point, there's a large discrepancy between plant available water, obviously in clays at the upper end of volumetric water content, large capacity of water available for plants, and much less so in sandy soils. So when we get to soilless substrates, you notice that minus 1,500 kilopascals. Well, that's what soil scientists use for a measure of water stress, but of course that's permanent water stress, and you're pretty much toast by then. So what we're really looking at is exploring the range between zero and probably minus 100 kilopascals, a 15th of that, to really understand what's going on in that respect. So Andrew presented this earlier this week. It's a figure from Hendrick and Black, and that is a increasing, I don't seem to have a track, oh, there we go. This increasing curve here is the amount of air increasing in the substrate in a container as that water drains. This is 10 kilopascals, minus 10 kilopascals here. So a lot happens in the first few hours after irrigation. We did some, this is early work done by a series of people working with soilless substrates in the 60s and 70s. They've been at it a long time. The difference, what has happened in that time, is that we've had an increasing capability in terms of measuring, and measuring in terms of sensors and also in terms of precision. Jean Caron did some work with tomato. This is really looking at some of the threshold values for optimal growth. And so along with Debout and Vedonk and Raviv, we're kind of in the minus 10 to perhaps minus 30 range. So here now we're getting some insights into really the tensions at which we're getting plant responses. We did some early work as well. I had a graduate student who did this work in tension tables. Difficult, long, and frustrating work. He did it in a number of soilless substrates. But what we're really been trying to do is relate the amount of available water to volumetric water content. And then another graduate student, way back in the day, we measured some stomatal conductance with increasing, in different substrates. We were working with TDR sensors at this point. So we've got a bit of a feel for where we are. That's just a brief, very brief background. But just wanted to give you an idea. This is a slide that Brooke also presented earlier in the week, just to give you an idea of where we can measure, how we can measure, and the range. So, to give you some insight into actual sensors that we're using this particular sensor, which is the MPS-6 out of Decagon Devices, now Meta. a Meta group. It's quite a nice sensor mainly because it's relatively low cost and it is relatively sensitive. Now, it's designed for work in soils, and hence the soil matrix potential range of -9 to literally 100 megapascals. Now, that's a huge range, and I'll show you some performance data in comparison to this sensor, which we have. This is probably the Cadillac of current tensiometers. It's a large sensor, and the most important thing is it's completely inappropriate for use in solar substrates, and it's also $1,000 a piece. So you're not going to persuade many growers to install these. But it does give extremely nice data at a very low soil matrix potential. So it's in the range where we want to be. So in terms of performance data, this is work from Brooks' work, which I'll summarize in a couple of slides, on strawberry. What I just wanted to show you, this is, I'm going to run through three slides quickly. They're all pretty much the same. This is his control treatment in soils, and this is repeated drawdowns over time. We've been working in soil beds, raised beds, open to rainfall, and so these are rainfall events in between his drawdowns. But I want you to notice how the MPS6 flatlines. So you pretty much got zero precision between 0 and minus 10 kilopascals. And it also seems to bottom out early in comparison to the T8 data. So we're getting increased precision at both ends. Brooke did mention that I should be careful in my interpretation of this data because we only have two T8s per block. So we don't have a very large amount of replication. But as you can see, as we get to lower tensions and threshold values, we're typically getting the same kind of data, same kind of response out of these two sensors, except we're just getting increased amplitude. And this is minus 60. Now, the reason that this is, and that's just all the treatments together with rainfall. Unfortunately, when you want to do deficit irrigation research, it always rains, right? So just a very quick summary with strawberry. What's interesting with strawberry is it seems exquisitely sensitive to water stress. So what Brooke is finding out, his 2016 data is a little, it's not so much resolution in that, but we did pick up some treatment differences in 2015 in terms of fruit number. This was water stress imposed just in the spring, but even with a short transient amount of water stress, we did get decreased fruit number, but no significant decrease in fruit size. So there's some interesting stuff we're learning. That's just a graphic of those results. There's some interesting stuff that we're learning from various crops. So I want to quickly segue into some work that Andrew reported on earlier this week. It's work done by Joanna de Castillo Munero. Sorry, I stumbled on that. But what we were helping them do, they're pathologists, and what we're interested in doing is understanding volumetric water content, matrix potential, crop growth, and pathology, and pathogen survival. So I just wanted to throw this in because these were the ranges that we've been looking at in terms of volumetric water content. And these are important because most greenhouse growers are in the 35 to 45% volumetric water range, and they are deathly afraid of going any lower. And what we've learned, and I'll show you in a little bit, is that if that is where our water savings is. So that's why we're trying to really nail down this precision in terms of matrix potential. As you can see, these data actually are generated from a high prop curve. And this is a lab procedure where we actually run these substrates through the high prop. But I wanted to show you this kind of hydrological curve where we're relating volumetric water content to matrix potential. So we've got a lab procedure. We're not incredibly confident in how accurate these results are because the high prop is only a 5-centimeter column. So when you get into a 20-centimeter pot, there may be some differences. What we found out from that study, though, is that we, at each of those 45, 35, and 25, we literally had no differences in shoot growth. We saw a little difference in root growth, but that was really only because these were fresh weights, and we think if they'd done the dry root weights, that anomaly would have disappeared, that significance would have disappeared. So getting on to the grower perspective, so we've been working with a commercial greenhouse grower in Maryland. And what's interesting, we've been doing a couple of years of outdoor mum production. And I wanted to show you, because we've been working at this set point of 40% volumetric water content, which is up in the right-hand corner there. That's just about field capacity, container capacity. And that is the blue line across here. So that's our set point. And the blue is the volumetric water contents as we irrigate. This is all sensor-based irrigation. So what's interesting is the black line is what we were monitoring the growers. And what I was particularly excited about is like, yes, they're going down to 10% volumetric water content. I've never seen 10% volumetric water content. And so I was convinced that we were going to see growth differences. Because that relates to, that's about minus 170 kilopascal in this particular substrate. Going forward. Lo and behold, when we analyze those data, no significant differences in growth. So that's why I'm being quite interested in a lot of the work that Mandy Bayer and others have been doing where they're looking at high-low. Because I'm wondering whether there isn't some capacity of these plants to actually deal with transient water stress. And that's what I think we need to investigate. We're currently doing a chrysanthemum study, and it's big and involved. I don't have any data to show you in terms of yield on that at this point because it's still going. But we're again looking at these thresholds. The big difference is actually now what we're doing is we're actually measuring volumetric water content and matrix potential in situ at the same time. So I'm kind of going to show you that. Those are the ranges, minus 5 to minus 28. Again, we're not really dealing with anything terribly startling in terms of matrix potential, but if I went to a chrysanthemum grower and said, grow at 23% volumetric water content, they'd probably laugh me out the door. So, again, what we're trying to do is quantify water use. That's the curve for a wood fiber substrate that is part of this study as well. We're interested to understand what's going with wood fiber compared to some of the commercial peat blends. Very similar hydrological curve, actually, on that. And what we're seeing is the set points. This is just some set point data from the last couple of weeks. The green is the 23 plus or minus. The black is the 33 plus or minus, and the blue is 43 plus or minus, and they're all about plus or minus 5% on the irrigation. It's a 15-second pulse whenever required. So we can irrigate up to 12, 14 times a day, and it irrigates when it reaches those particular thresholds. So it's the same in the wood fiber substrate. We're getting fairly steady volumetric water contents, but this is the matrix potential data. So these are MPS6 sensors in those parts, and I'm really interested to see the resolution that we're getting, because even though I showed you that data flatlined at minus 10, we're discriminating minus 6, minus 8, and minus 10 at those particular control points at 5. So we're getting a little bit of variability. 35%, you can see we're getting differences, not so much in that point, but they seem to be separating out. The green is the average of two sensors. And just to show you the 25% volumetric water content, that's the data on that. So to finish up just briefly, I think we're getting close to being able to actually measure real-time matrix potentials in soil substrates. Most important thing with sensors that are relatively low cost and, more importantly, don't need any maintenance. If any of you have worked with tensiometers before, it's the maintenance that is a bear. We've had these lab hydrologic curves generated by our HyProc data. They seem to be relatively well correlated. And what's really interesting, we are not really seeing much discrimination in plant growth, at least with chrysanthemum poinsettia, below minus 30 kilopascals. So we seem to be shifting the dial a little further up, and that's what we've got to explore. We've got to explore from 30% volumetric water content now down to maybe 10% and really push the limit on that. I'm also very interested in following up with the other studies that our colleagues are doing on alternating irrigations and understanding what water does at different growth periods. We're going to be following up on that with strawberry this fall. So with that, I'm not sure if I have a time for a question, but maybe one.
All right. I'll catch you up.